go ahead and go. But if something happens, like if you start having seizures or passing out or blacking out or whatever, you have to come home because you definitely are having complications.
This is episode 99 of the NeuroExperience podcast. I'm your host, Louise Nicola. Joining me today is the founder of Young and Reckless, Chris Drama Pfaff. I especially love this episode. At the very start, Chris shares a story of how he had a traumatic accident that left him in a coma for 4 days and how that changed his entire life. In this episode, we discuss Drama's upbringing, how he built his brand into what it is today, his traumatic accident that led him to being in a coma for 4 days, his opinion on entrepreneurship, advice for anybody starting a brand and business in 2019, and the pitfalls and challenges that comes with success. Let's get into it. Drama, thank you so much for being on the podcast, The Neuro Experience, episode 99. I'm so excited to talk to you, learn more about you, understand, you know, what the future holds for you. And I know the audience is too. So before we kick it off, why don't you start by telling us, you know, your story, how you got to where you are and what you're doing now?
For sure. And I am so happy to be here. I love the number one, thanks for the invite. I love the name. I'm obsessed with brain things and you'll find out why very soon. So I'm excited. I will kind of, my story can be very long or very short. So I'll give you the short version and then you ask me anything in particular that you want to know about.
Brilliant.
I grew up, just outside of Akron, Ohio, really small town, not much going on at all. Good childhood. My parents are still together to this day. We didn't have a lot of money, but my parents didn't show that. Like, I don't remember ever growing up with money being an issue, but you know, they skipped on things like cable TV and little stuff like that to save money here and there. But like I said, never noticed it. At a very young age, at probably 10 or 11 years old, I discovered skateboarding and I fell in love with it. And it's all I wanted to do all day long, every day, all day. My parents wanted me to do sports and do school activities. I didn't want to. I was just obsessed with skateboarding. So that love drove me to around the age of 15. I started realizing that the moment I graduated high school and could leave Ohio, I wanted to go to LA, not only because LA just seemed awesome, and it is awesome, but because it's the skateboard capital of the universe. It's where all the companies are. It's where all the pro skateboarders live. And it just seemed like absolute paradise to me. So come 18 years old, high school graduation, I end up graduating high school. That weekend go on a quick skate trip and then I'm going to plan my move to LA. On that skate trip, I fell, hit my head, was in a coma for 4 days. That's where my love of brains comes from. Concussions on both sides of my brain, severe brain hemorrhaging, you know, the whole works. And that delayed my trip quite a while. So trip was delayed, ended up moving in November of that year, about 6 months later. Came out here, tried to figure out what the heck was going on. I had a cousin that lived out here who was a pro skateboarder that, you know, I didn't know very well at the time, but obviously he lived out here. He's a skateboarder. He's the first person I reached out to. I said, hey, if there's anything I can do, I'll scrub floors, I'll wash dishes, I'll do literally anything. I just want to survive in LA. Ended up becoming his personal assistant. Shortly thereafter, we ended up filming funny content that ended up becoming a hit television show on MTV called Robin Big. And that blew up, that changed everything because now all of a sudden we're playing on a little bit of a different field. We have, you know, all of these eyeballs, we have all of this attention. What do we do with it? And, you know, he was always very entrepreneurial minded and, you know, I was too, but I was very young at the time. So it took me quite a while to figure out kind of my thing. That show led into another show called Fantasy Factory. I used that as a platform to launch my clothing brand, Young and Reckless, which was the key to all of my dreams being able to live in LA comfortably, establish my own life, not have to be on TV for a living, be able to run a business. I mean, that is really where my dreams started to come true. And since then, that was 10 years ago that I launched Young and Reckless. My TV career ended 5 years ago-ish. And now every single day I spend all of my time trying to, you know, run that business better, constantly learn and evolve and grow through the changing market and everything that's always happening, as well as on the side, continue to learn. You know, my mind was blown when I moved from Ohio to LA. This is pre-internet, pre-social media. So you didn't have access to all of these great mentors. So when I moved here and started meeting these amazing, hardworking people in LA, it changed my whole outlook of what I could accomplish or what was even possible or how to even go about doing it. So I try to continuously do that. I do that on my podcast. I do that off my podcast, but in most of my content is based around me learning. And then I try to share that with everyone possible, share what I've learned, and hopefully spark that same experience in somebody else. So that's the short version.
Look, I've got so much. I think this podcast could go on for the next 24 hours because you've said so many things that I want to get into. And I want to start off with when you fell off your skateboard and fractured your skull. You had a brain hemorrhage. You were in a coma for 4 days. The reason why I love that so much, well, obviously, I'm sorry to hear that that happened, but I had a similar story as an elite triathlete. I took a fall prior going to Beijing. I was hit by a car. I was smashed up against the guardrail and it shattered my dreams. I had to forfeit my position for Beijing. And that's when I started to fall in love with the brain. It's because, I had this dying desire to be at the Olympics. And when it was taken away from me by somebody else in a car, the doctor said to me, "You're never going to run again." And yeah. I remember at that time I flew to Colorado. This was back in 2012. I flew to Colorado and I met with Bobby McGee, who at the time was Usain Bolt's running coach. And he was the one that said to me, he said, "It's not your body that you need to fix. It's your brain." And I had no idea what he meant. And that's when I started to become obsessed with it. And that's what I believe started, you know, my journey and who I am and how the business of neuroathletics evolved, because I really think that everyone operates from a brain perspective, like brain first, action second. So I want to know, from your injury, what was the aftermath like?
Gosh, it was brutal. So my experience of it was this. I remember waking up and eating breakfast. I woke up 4 days later. I was confused. The biggest thing that I remember so vividly, because it was so weird, was my fingernails were longer. My little baby chin hair was longer. Like, you could tell that you had sort of, time had passed, but it felt like, you know, you fell asleep or something. So I was so confused. I remember trying to kind of wrap my head around what happened. I couldn't read. Like, I couldn't read words. That took a couple weeks to come back. As soon as I left the hospital, my parents said, "Look, you can have whatever food you want. What food do you want? You just got out of the hospital eating that crappy food." And I said, "You know what? I just want a pizza. Let's just go get like a Pizza Hut pizza or something." And I was so excited and I got it and it had no taste. I couldn't taste any food. And then I got home and, you know, all that I wanted to do at that time was be on my computer. I had just gotten a Mac, you know, back when they were brand new, and I would always edit little skateboard videos and stuff. And so I logged onto my computer and I remember the home screen kind of booting up and I didn't know how to use it. And it was so weird. And, you know, I couldn't sleep on my left side. If I laid on my left side, cause that's where I hit. If I laid on my left side, I would feel like I was going to throw up. Like, I'd feel instantly very dizzy. So super weird, super crazy. Felt like my whole brain rebooted. And just really, just weird, you know? And I had to really kind of get back to feeling normal again. And that, in hindsight, that took years. But, you know, at the time, it felt like it took a few months.
Yeah, it's interesting because I would only imagine that 10 years ago, we weren't as forward thinking as what we are today. You know, nowadays, we can look, you know, everybody knows the word neuroplasticity. You know, now we're looking at performance in brain training. And back then, if you were to say, "I need to rehabilitate my brain," a lot of people would be like, you know, "What are you talking about?" So it would have been a harder journey to go through it back then than what it would be to go through it today.
Yeah, big time. And I got to be honest, I mean, I'm sure I had great doctors. I don't want to make it sound like I'm downing them. But, you know, so the reason why I couldn't leave for California quickly was because I had a blood clot in my brain that apparently came from the skull fracture. And so I kept, every month I would have to go get a new CAT scan to see if this blood clot had left my brain. And And I couldn't leave until it had, because that can cause some pretty severe complications. And so come November, it still wasn't gone, but they could tell how bad I wanted to move. And LA was my dream. And, you know, they could tell. And so they said to me, go ahead and go. But if something happens, like if you start having seizures or passing out or blacking out or whatever, you have to come home because you definitely are having complications. So I was like, oh my gosh. So I moved here not knowing the city, not knowing anyone, and feeling like I was going to have a stroke at any moment. And it just wasn't, you know, the knowledge around what really happened, what I really needed to do, and all that stuff seemed much less than what I've found out since.
But do you think on any level that this made you more inclined to be motivated and push yourself further and achieve your dreams?
Gosh, you want to know what my honest answer is?
Yeah.
I think in the beginning, it slowed my dreams down big time, right? So I was so obsessed with moving to LA that nothing was going to stop that. But I was scared to death for years. I was scared every time I got up too quick and got lightheaded. I was scared. I was scared that I was going to get in a fight somewhere in a bar and die. You know, like I was so scared because my whole world had been sort of rocked, and like that feeling of getting your brain rebooted, like it gave me some pretty severe anxiety, I think. So I think in that aspect, it hurt my progress. Now, two things. There's a little bit of luck that happened to me where I was planning on moving to LA with my older brother in June, right after I graduated. And probably, I'm just guessing, he's my older brother. He probably would have been first in line to maybe be my cousin's assistant. Maybe we would have just ended up working at the skate shop together, which was our plan. We would have moved in together. The fact that 6 months that I had to take off, in that medium time, my brother got a girlfriend and didn't want to leave Ohio. And so I was devastated, but that's why I just moved, and I called the only person I knew that was my cousin. And that ended up sending me on this crazy journey of doing TV. And now, I mean, my cousin is like my older brother. We're so close, and I wouldn't, you know half of the stuff I know without him. And so it really kind of led me into this lucky, like, who would have thought moment in time that I really benefited from. Lastly, here's the last part of it. Now that I am really focused on learning and being the best version of myself that I can be, and this has really ramped up in the past few years, this whole brain injury thing has 100% been the battery in my back, because I have something to fuel me. Like, I have something to say, oh, I had that, and look at all these places it did affect me when I didn't think that it did. And I recently just went and got a brain scan to see what the blood flow in my brain and the activity in my brain, and you can still see a little portion lacking proper blood flow from where that injury was. So now I'm on supplements, and I'm getting a hyperbaric chamber, and I'm getting my blood work done, and I'm doing all these things. So it has 100% fueled my growth, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Look, there's so many things that you can be doing nowadays, and, you know, we'll probably get into that later. Thank you for sharing that. I want to look at, okay, great, this happened, which led you to be on MTV. You started your new career, then you started Young and Reckless. So what was the concept behind that? How did it come together?
So it was this. It was my dream, and what I sort of, as I started growing up out here, what I realized I was being pulled towards was starting a business. Like, I thought it was so cool. Like, my cousin became this ultra celebrity from being the star of these shows. But he was sponsored by a company called DC Shoes. And that brand blew up along with him. And I was always so, like, I always looked up to the owner of DC Shoes more than, like, the celebrity of the people around me. And I just thought, man, it'd be so cool to own a brand. It's so much larger than life. It's so much bigger than just you. And you can use other people that convey the message to help elevate that. But it's not me saying, okay, let's go be funny today. Let's go be, you know, silly today. It didn't rely on that. And that was really, really pulling me. So my dream was, my goal was, how do I create something, hopefully create a business that doesn't rely on me just being out front on TV every day and not have to worry about TV? I didn't necessarily love TV. I'm not like I don't have that star quality, right? So so I was always thinking of ideas, and I tried a million things. I tried being a music producer for a little while because I grew up playing the drums. I tried a microwave burrito company. I tried a men's accessories business that I was going to sell at like Tilly's that was called Knickknacks, and it was a bunch of interchangeable bracelets. Like, I tried all of these different things, but the thing that really hit was Young and Reckless. And the thought behind it was, how do I create a brand that speaks to me, that speaks to the kid that wants to leave his or her hometown scared to death, learn, and try to find a better life? And that's what it was. I think it resonated with customers really well. I think the fact that it was clothing and I could wear it and I could promote it and I could put it on close friends and build a brand around it, it all just sort of worked. I mean, I had a lot of failures, but that one ended up
working. I really love that you spoke about how many things you tried and that didn't work out, because what I'm hearing a lot of now, and I'm sure you can back me up on this, is we've got this culture of millennial entrepreneurship, which is fantastic. It's thriving. But what I see a lot of is people, young people saying, okay, great, I'm going to start a business and it's going to take off. I'm going to make $1 million in my first year. And I know from being in the trenches myself, you know, for a long period of time, it's like there's a lot more to it. There's a lot of iterating. There's a lot of, you know, testing in the market, take it to market, bring it back, iterate, take it to market, bring it back, iterate, try something, fail. So I want to know, how long did it take for you to actually see success?
Yeah. So number one, I couldn't agree with you more. And I try to kind of block some of that out because it will actually frustrate me. But I think it's, you know, I just think to all your listeners, like, you just have to be careful. And that's why it's really important to pay attention to who you follow and where you get information. Like, there's a lot of really good information in books. You know, if you're trying to get all the inspiration in the world from Instagram, chances are there's going to be a lot of BS and a lot of people who are fronting. And you're not going to get the best actual information that's really going to be useful for your life. So just be careful where you're getting your education, just like you would anything else. But for me, this is what it looked like. So I had this idea for the clothing company. We were about to start this new show called Fantasy Factory, and I knew this was my chance, like, once in a lifetime opportunity to launch an idea. So I came up with all these ideas, blah, blah, blah. Then I came up with the name Young and Reckless, but we started filming the show before I was able to get trademarks and do all that stuff, because I didn't know how to do any of that stuff. I was trying to figure it out. So I was devastated. I thought, gosh, there's a really good chance this show could be one season and over. You never know. And I could have just blown the opportunity of my life. So thank God I didn't. We got picked up for a second season. By that time, I had my trademarks ready. But I didn't know how to make clothes. I was 22 years old. I didn't know how to sell it, get it in stores. I mean, I'm on this platform, but I need to be able to take advantage of it. I need someone that actually knows how to really do this quickly. So I went around and pitched the idea to a bunch of pre-existing clothing companies and people that knew how to make it. And I found the perfect partners, and they're still my partners to this day. And it was a match made in heaven, because they were looking for something new. Their old business was getting kind of, you know, stagnant, and they believed in this weird, you know, now every influencer has a clothing line. But at the time, a guy on reality TV pitching this grand idea for the next big, you know, young adult sensation is pretty far-fetched. So I needed someone that believed in that vision, and I found it. And so we launched, we tied it into what I was doing on the show, and we got it in stores. And I thought, well, here we go. You know, this is it. I'm finally rich, and I'm just going to be a millionaire tomorrow. And even with all of that, even with being in stores, having business partners, having a TV show platform of me wearing it, it had a big first month, and then it just crapped out, and it was in the back of the stores collecting dust. And the problem with when you go to these big retailers is you kind of get one shot, and if you're not moving forward, you're dying, because they have no reason to sit there and try to spend all this time babying one brand. What do they care? So if you're growing, you know, they'll do a test of 20 doors and 50 doors and 100 doors. And if you keep selling, they're going to keep ramping you up. And if you keep selling, they're going to keep making orders. If you stop, they stop. And if you're not selling in 20 doors, 50 doors, 100 doors, you're going down, down, down. And eventually they're just not making orders anymore. And that happens really, really fast. And in my first year, I was really on the verge of that happening, and that would have kind of been it. That would have been my shot. It would have been hard to get back in those stores. And so I knew that. Obviously, I panicked. And my goal was never to sell merch as a reality guy on TV. So I knew what I had to do. And that was go to everyone in the world that I could beg and plead to throw on a t-shirt or throw on a hat and take a cell phone picture, post it. That was right when Instagram started. Post it on there and make it look like this was the biggest thing in the world. And so I tracked down every rapper, every Disney star, every anyone, and begged them. And we built it up, and then, you know, slowly we did a deal with Machine Gun Kelly. That was our first deal where we actually paid someone to work with us, and he did content, and I went on tour with him, and now all of a sudden people are showing up to his shows wearing Young and Reckless. And then we did a project with Meek Mill. And so that was about to the very long way, I apologize, of answering your question, is about the third year it started to really gain some steam. And we started, you know, the orders got bigger and the checks got bigger and the, you know, everything started moving. And from there it was just, okay, how do we keep this momentum up and how do we keep scaling it? But even with all of that in place, it took.
See, I love how you said when you thought that, you know, you reached a stage where you're like, okay, if I don't do this, if I don't go and do 1,000 door knocks, I'm probably not going to be here. I'm not going to have this brand. So I love that you did whatever it takes. And I think, in my opinion, that's what, you know, a lot of people may be lacking today, because, you know, they now with Instagram, I think that I feel as though that sometimes it's an easy way out now. Sometimes it's an easy way for people,
in what way?
For people to think, well, instead of doing the door knocking, okay, and by door knocking, I mean getting in the trenches and doing the hard work on your feet, going and doing, you know, I think that right now we think, okay, great, I've just got Instagram, I've just got Facebook, I'll just whack some money on it, I'll just get some influencers. And I think that even today, because I was brought up in a world where I watched my parents, you know, they were immigrants from Cyprus and they came to Australia. And they worked with their hands. You know, we were in a food business. I had to watch them 7 days a week. There was no internet. There was nothing easy about it. And I still think that even in 2019, there is a sense of that. And I think that's what we're losing.
Yeah, big time. No, I mean, 1,000,000,000%. And I mean, here's the good news. I think forever in history, there's been fakers, there's been lazy people, there's been people that posture and look like they're doing the work when they aren't. That it's just the platform is different. So it's just easier to build an audience that believes your BS than it was in the past. But the good news is, for the people who do get out of their comfort zones and do knock on doors and do not take themselves too serious for in the pursuit of a bigger idea, the rewards are still there, right? So the way, when I look at it, I'm like, gosh, I'm glad everyone's lazy. I'm glad it's easier to be lazy, because that means that if I work harder, it's easier for me to pull through all of that noise. And that's what I think you see. Like, you're seeing a lot of influencers, a lot of social media people have quick success. And it's really easy to always pay attention to these people having this weird quick success and think that that is the model for building a business. You need to look at the people that have been here for some time and that have had repeated success. And those people are always knocking on doors and going the extra mile. And it has been that way for all of us.
Yeah, I think you can actually, you can see behind the blue glass and those glowing screens, because I don't think that anybody who makes it to the top in a really short period of time, I think it's about maintenance. It's like, okay, great, you made it. That's great. Can you stay there? Can you sustain it? You know, Jay-Z says that excellence comes from having a number one record 10 years in a row, not just one record and then you've gone. So I believe that in entrepreneurship. Yep. So I want to ask you about fear, and if you had any fear at all during your journey. It's something that comes up a lot in my emails and with podcast questions. It's like, do people at, you know, the level of success that you've gotten, and you've met, you know, Meek Mill, and I'm sure you've met a lot of other people, was there any sense of fear that you had?
Yes. I mean, so much of it, like an overwhelming amount. And I think that not only was there the fear in the very beginning, because you have to also keep in mind, in order to get to the place where I was able to launch a clothing company on like my sixth attempt of trying to start a business, and that taking 3 years to start, I had done 5 years of this reality show and working on all that stuff all day long to even get to the point where I had a platform to maybe launch something, right? So there was this whole process before the process. And I was scared to death. I was scared when I moved here. I mean, I remember I moved here and the very first night I called my mom like in tears, and it's embarrassing now, but it's true, and saying, I don't think I can do it. Like, LA is so much different than where I grew up, and it seemed so scary and just, I don't know, just seemed so big and scary and foreign. And I almost moved home. I mean, I really, really thought about moving home. And then, you know, jumping into the reality stuff, it's all amazing now. And when I talk about it in hindsight, it paid off and it's so incredible. But man, like, I didn't understand any of that stuff. And I didn't understand what being on TV meant or how to deal with that or how to deal with all the things that were going to come because of that. While we were filming, I smoked cigarettes at the time, I hate to admit. I used to sneak outside and smoke cigarettes on the stairs and just like sort of hide because I was having like mini panic attacks because everything was just over my head. You know, it just felt very overwhelming. That being said, all the way up to today, 10 years in business, I still deal with fear very heavily. It's not that same type. I'm not having panic attacks on the stairs and chain smoking, but the bad news is, the good news is you've been in business 10 years. The bad news is there's a lot of people now that pay attention. And so you can't just try anything. I mean, when you try something, it's saying this is a direction we're going with the brand and this is what it means. And you don't know if you're right or wrong. And at the end of the day, it all falls on me, and it's scary, but you know, that's what you learned. You don't learn to get rid of fear. You just learn to manage it. That's how you grow.
So do you think that let's flip this around a bit and talk about from a service based business perspective, because I know like when you have a product, you can, you know, going through and like what you did, you can put it on famous people, you can put rappers in it and it can build your brand and build your revenue. Let's just say you went into business with a service-based business. Do you think it would have been just as easy? Well, I'm not saying easy, but do you think you would have done the exact same process, or do you think it's different for people with service-based businesses?
Well, I think there's no way around. Like I think it's hard no matter what you do. And the same way that it's easy to look at other people's lives and say like, yeah, but they had it easy because blah, blah, blah. It's hard for everyone. Life is hard for everyone, period. It's just, you're playing the game a different way. And the same way that in my business, I got to go work with Meek Mill and do all these fun things, I also have had to make really risky hiring decisions. I've had to fire people that I consider very close friends. A lot of them. I've had to make decisions on, you know, funding inventory and all these different, like, very just sort of boring business decisions as well. They're just not as fun to talk about. So I think, yeah, to answer your question, I think it's the same in any business. It does not matter if you're selling handbags on Pinterest. It no matter what you're doing, it's all relative, you know, and the game, the one thing that is true is fear is there for everyone. The way that you master it or learn to, you know, deal with it is the skill that you build, not wishing it away or not, 100%. You know what I'm saying?
I think it also comes down to being really quiet and focusing on your art and what your service is or your product, because I think there's a lot of noise right now and I want to touch on that now. I want to know your opinions on the state of entrepreneurship today. But from my perspective, I think even for myself, it's like there's just so many things to look at, so many things to see. There's always something new going on and it's like, okay, if you can quiet the noise, I think the answers will come to you, whether it's a product business, whether it's a service-based business. That's why I always bring it back to the brain always comes first. So in saying that, what in your opinion do you think is the state of entrepreneurship today?
I think entrepreneurship is on a bigger pedestal than it's ever been. It's so darn cool. I mean, you just like to think that kids want to throw the word entrepreneur in their Instagram bio and that's a badge of honor. I mean, it's cool. Like that aspect of it is cool. And I think that when you have things going on, like a lot of jobs being lost and you have things going on, like college sort of failing a lot of people, I think the awareness that entrepreneurship is an option is something to absolutely celebrate. That being said, I think that is also really, really dangerous. And anytime something becomes a badge and something that is, you're signaling, you're sort of building up your own ego by saying you're this thing, and you can kind of lie pretty easily. That's really dangerous because you don't want to be tricked about anything, about how hard it actually is, and lacking the self-awareness of what you're actually doing and what results this is actually going to get you. And I think there's a lot of young people with really, really high hopes and a really big ego right now that are sure that everything's going to fall in line, and it's not. And I think as silly as it is to sit here and say like, haha, it's not going to work out, it's actually scary. It's actually that means a lot of people that are delusional and that are headed in a bad direction and don't even know it. And the end result of that is not good. And that's not something I would wish on anyone, because one day it catches up and it's not a happy day, you know? So
I think I'm really happy you brought that up, because I listen to Gary Vee, often, and he's really trying to focus on right now speaking and giving depression amongst entrepreneurship, you know, a voice to say, well, this is what's actually happening. You know, we put a lot of people on pedestals, but we're not really talking about the people who don't make it, the people and what they go through on a daily basis. And I see, you know, in my industry, I see firsthand what you know, people can concoct in their mind from, as you know, an Instagram post. And I speak about this in probably almost every podcast, and I did a podcast dedicated to it, saying that Instagram should come with an emotional license, because I think it plays a role right now. Social media plays a role. If you're starting a business, it's like, okay, great, let's set up a social media account. But there's more to it than that. It's, do you have the emotional capabilities of having, you know, being able to handle Instagram, being able to handle the hate, which I'm sure you've had a few comments here and there that probably weren't nice, and you've got to be able to handle them.
Oh my God. I've had the worst. I've had the craziest comments. There was a period of, you know, 'cause for me, I was on this TV show. So I had this sort of character that was portrayed a certain way, being like the little homie to my big cousin and all that stuff. And so, and it was funny and it made great TV. But when I went to start a business, it felt like anytime I posted like a win, or a victory, or something was going well, or I got ripped to shreds. And it was like, you're just a little, you know, I don't know if I can curse on here, but you're just blah, blah, blah. You would be nothing without this and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, geez, man, like nobody wants me to win. Like it really felt. And once again, sounds silly to say now, but at 24, it was very, very, I did take it serious. And it felt like, gosh, what's the point of even not only posting, but what's the point of even like, no one wants to see me win. Everyone hates me for some reason. And it did feel that way. And it did slow me down. And it was a roadblock. And it's, once again, it's silly now, but it's not silly when you're kind of caught in it. And even to this day, I mean, I posted a video of me boxing the other day, like working out, like just saying, hey, I'm having a lot of fun learning how to box for fitness. And it was just like, What's up with you skipping leg day? What's up, clown? Why are you putting, you know, it's like, oh God, okay, never mind. I'm not even going to like, whatever. So yes, it happens all the time. Yes, it's very serious. Everyone gets it. And there's just, it just is the name of the game. I mean, you got to be careful. You definitely have to be prepared for it. It's not real life. It's this other weird ulterior universe where people can say whatever they want and there's no repercussions, and they have fun just roasting people. And I think, you know, it's part of the game. In 2019, if you want to start a business, 99% of them need to have a social media presence. And unfortunately, the people that hate you are a lot louder than the people that love
you. Do you feel like your friendship circle got smaller as you gained more success?
So the only reason why I say no is because growing up, I had a small circle. You know, I had four friends I hung out with every day, and those were my skateboard homies. And we just, that's all I cared about. I didn't go to school dances. I didn't need to be the most popular kid in class, whatever. And it's still kind of that way now. I mean, so really nothing has changed. If anything, I probably have a little bit more friends, because I've learned that that's always not the healthiest way to go about it. And it's good to get out and meet people. And there are a lot of really good people out there. And there's always these stories of like, well, when you get successful, everyone wants to take from you and everyone wants what you have. Sure, that is true. But there's also a lot of people that really want to help and that really want to, you know, have these type of conversations. And I've always been a pretty small circle type of guy, and I'm still that way today, but I'm, you know, it's worked for me. I don't feel what I want to get out there, I guess, is contrary to a lot of the popular stories, I in no way feel like, gosh, I've really had to buckle down and just only hang out with a few people because it's so dangerous out there. Cause that's not
awesome. I feel the exact same way. So we're leading into the end of the podcast. I want to talk about the event, and I want to talk about what type of awareness you're bringing with the event. I know you've got one coming up. Is that right? No.
Yes, one coming up. I'm so
What's
excited.
It for? What are you doing? Is it to promote your brand? Is it to talk about entrepreneurship?
Yep. So here's what it is. It's like I said, when I started Young and Reckless 10 years ago, all I wanted it to do was speak to that next version of myself that maybe doesn't think they can leave their hometown, or they can't, you know, maybe not do what their parents say they need to do or whatever. And they have this feeling that there's something better for them. And that's who I wanted to speak to. So when I started my podcast 2 years ago, same thing. I interviewed other successful people or coaches or teachers or whatever, anything I can do to have cool, fun conversations to try to help inspire that in people. And it's helped me immensely. So this event is really just the next evolution of both of those things. And it's that, you know, it's fun to do podcasts, and my podcast has gotten quite a bit of listeners, and I'm very thankful for that. But there's still nothing like being in a room with real human beings having a conversation and making it real. Because I think it's easy to listen to podcasts all day and feel like, gosh, I'm learning all this stuff, but those people are still so far away. They're still not like me. They're still different. And this really closes that gap and lets you see people in person, meet people in person. I pretty much have, you know, all of my favorite guests from the podcast come together and do panels and Q&As and keynote speeches. And it's really just putting everything that I stand for in the physical form in a room for one day. Everyone comes and you get to hear insight from all different types of people. And you know, I don't know. I just think that the last time I did it, I've done one other one, and it was in May, and that was my first attempt. And it was so cool to see not only the people talking to the people on stage, but talking to each other. And people were meeting, you know, pitching business ideas to each other and partnering up and meeting up afterwards. And it's this room full of people that do want better and do want to be entrepreneurs, like we talked about, and do want to, whatever, be athletes, achieve anything. But they're actually getting out of their house and they're making it real and they're meeting people and they're putting it into work.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely cool love thing. The first so, event you had, my buddy Mikey Taylor up there, and Mark. So it was amazing. Now,
yes,
this is the last question that I'm going to ask you. I ask everybody on the podcast, and that is, what's the one piece of advice that you could give somebody? If you had to choose just one piece
general,
of advice.
Yep. What I would say is, whatever that idea in your head is that you're questioning and you're looking for answers, and that's why you're listening to this podcast, and that's why you're listening to all these other podcasts and doing whatever you're doing, you have to just do it. Just put something into action. Because sure, you can get all of the information that you can possibly get from outside sources and advice and mentors and blah, blah, blah. But you are never, no one's ever going to be able to write out a blueprint for you or a map for you. And you're never, at the end of the day, going to learn as well as you will just trying and failing and changing plan and adjusting and little win, big failure, little failure. That's where all of your personal growth comes from. You know, we always talk about these people like Warren Buffett and whatever that, well, what does Warren Buffett do for a living? Warren Buffett really trusts his instincts for a living. That's what he does. But he spent the last, you know, multiple decades building up his instincts. And he's done that through trying things and learning what works and what doesn't. And you just got to do it. I like that information is more accessible than ever about how to do cool things. But I hope that doesn't make people not actually go do them, because instead they can sit and listen to how the to
absolutely
do them.
Absolutely love that. Thank you so much. Where can we find out more about you? Where do we go to?
So the main thing is Instagram. I'm just Drama on Instagram. That's where I post everything, my event. I post clips from my podcast. My podcast is called Short Story Long. It's everywhere where podcasts are. And yeah, I mean, if you follow those
two
things.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to speak to you.